Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 138 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. Just a quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way your feed will be automatically updated when we release episodes. But you can also listen to us on many other fine podcast streaming services such as Stitcher, Google Play, and iHeartRadio. Please rate and review our podcast if you have a spare 30 seconds and help us reach more theater lovers out there around the globe. And now for this week's podcast. There's a new Florian Zeller play in the West End. How many times you hear that recently? It's not the first time, right? But it is a good thing. If you do hear that sentence, you know you're heading for a great evening in the theater. So book your tickets to this one. This offering, The Son, finishes off a trilogy of plays following the father and the mother, both hitting London stage, with the latter playing at the Tricycle Theatre, which soon after became the Kiln Theatre, the same theatre that brings us the transfer of The Son. It's all very exciting, isn't it? And regardless of where they end up, Zeller's plays seem to resonate with the audiences that come in and with critics alike, winning nominations and awards aplenty, not only here but around the globe. With The Height of the Storm currently taking Broadway by storm and generating some Tony Award buzz. On this side of the Atlantic, The Son, starring a quartet of incredibly talented actors, lit up the Kiln Theatre, garnering rave reviews before announcing a transfer to the Duke of York's Theatre early on in its run, something that the cast talk about. Michael Longhurst's production, I'm not going to lie, it's a hard-hitting, brutal play about teen depression, broken relationships, new relationships, stressed loyalties. I mean, even as I'm saying this, there's so much more in this play to discover. It almost warrants a second and third viewing. I had the opportunity to sit down with the principals in the cast just before warm-up, and literally as they were making their way into their dressing rooms, Amaka Okafor, John Light, Laurie Coniston, and Amanda Abington. I sat down with them to discuss the play's themes, the rehearsal process, and the audience reactions, among other things. Have a listen.
My name is Amaka Okafor, and I play Sophia in the show.
Okay.
John Light, and I play Pierre.
It's, you guys play a couple who are going through a lot of new things, having to deal with also, it's a new relationship, new child, and a new situation with an old relationship and an older child. I would love to talk about, I saw you guys this week and it was devastating. I was devastated by this play, I have to be honest. Like, it was just so real. And you get sucked in, like the audience, I from where I was sitting, were leaning in, and that's always a good thing.
That's cool.
But when you started this process, were you aware of the delicate situation and the balance that you might have to bring to the stage? We chatted before we recorded of the response that you get during Q&As and things.
Yeah. Well, I think, when the audition first came through and I read it and thought about Sophia, at first I was like, ugh, I can't step into this person. And then the more I prepared for it, the more I just sort of fell in love with her, and she's a really complex, difficult character. And I love that about her now. And I feel like my parents are separated, and I watched them do that and watched them do it quite badly. So I just feel like I'm quite close to this situation, and I sort of relish playing it out, the nuances between different partners and a sort of stepson situation and having a new baby, which, you know, I know what that's like, and being and a relationship starting in a place that you feel like it's a bit hazy about whether they had an affair or not.
Yeah.
And so we talked about that quite a lot in rehearsals, and I sort of was like, I need to know if they did or not. I need to know if they did, because I need to know what kind of person she is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All of that stuff is quite hot.
Yeah. I suppose, like, the follow-on to that was, like, it's quite... because it could go quite elastic of how big you can play that, or how small you can play that relationship, or how, you know... observationally, you play it quite delicately, so when you do things like dance with your son, like, it becomes this lovely moment. John Light.
He's got the moves.
I had no idea.
No. Neither did I.
When we reduce this to, like, boilerplate, this is a play that delves... it's about mental health issues. That's just boilerplate. That is, like, the base level, but it's so much more than that. Table work. Did you guys do a lot of table work?
We did loads, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's really important. Like, there's a duty of care here in this type of show, isn't there?
Yeah.
Is it Laurie?
Hey!
Come and sit down.
Come on in. Sit down. We're good. Join us.
Hey, dude.
You good?
Yeah.
We're just talking about table work and stuff that you did, just because I think in a show that has a message, is powerful, or has undertones, anything, like what people can take from it, there's a duty of care, I think, to present a story, because people will go away and feel angry or introspective or...
Yeah, we did an absolute load of table work to the point when we thought, when are we going to get...
on our feet.
It was at least 2 weeks, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
And we had specialists come in and talk to us about this kind of stuff as well.
Yeah.
You always remember their actual roles really well.
We had a child psychologist.
Yeah.
And a family mediator, so someone who specialises in divorce and young people's behaviour when families split up, which was just, so valuable to have them there.
Yeah.
Just even to be able to justify some things in the script to us, where you go, oh, these are real things, that they really do happen, and just, you know, if you have questions, you can ask them and they give you a definitive answer, and you're like, that's brilliant.
Because we read it, and there were some bits where we were just like, oof, this feels a bit harsh, man.
Mm, yeah.
Like, this really feels like, really, would you really do that? And they it was so validating for them.
Mm.
They came in and they literally went, I know this child,
I know
this family, I see them all the time. And we were like, fuck, okay, this is real, and it's a responsibility.
Yeah. Sure. There are things that are said and things that are done that... the scene that you, the fight that you guys have, you know, the rage, like, I'm in there as a father going, I feel like doing that, but don't do it. I feel like doing that, but oh God, just tell him what's what. And then, oh, don't. I mean, that is the struggle.
Yeah.
What was that like, finding it in the room in rehearsal?
Well, the first thing that happened was the rehearsal was set up so that there was quite a lot of fun. It was a sort of happy place to begin with, so we started the day dancing, and we started the day we all got on well quickly. But then the rehearsal room was always a mess as well. A mess on stage, so we never cleared that mess up.
I found that really hard.
Yeah, I'm walking in at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we'd, because it's from scene 4 onwards, so there's 14 scenes, the rest of the show, where it's a mess, and walking in that at 10 o'clock in the morning, especially if you know that you've got a hard scene to do, and the whole place is just
an
tip.
Absolute tip.
So I would occasionally brush, so it was marked out on the floor, the stage was marked out, so I'd occasionally brush all the debris just onto the stage, so at least the areas around it were clean.
That's fascinating.
Because you just can't think straight.
No, yeah. It's horrible. And now I don't even notice it on stage at all.
Can walk on it without.
Yeah. Wow.
It's quite fun, that challenge.
It's great. Well, as an audience member, I was going, is somebody clean?
Yeah.
Somebody clean that up?
I try and clean as much as I can in there.
But those moments are fantastic because there are the moments when you do need a bit of clarity. When you feel like, okay, I have to do something to help clear up a bit of this mess.
Yeah.
So well.
Yeah.
But that's in the script. That's written at that point that Sophia tidies up and is written in the same way that Nicholas trashes the place and nobody notices. And you know, Mike and the design team have done a brilliant job at like making that quite so impressive. But still it's there from the writing.
It's in the writing.
Yeah. And I think Florian in his other stuff, I remember watching The Father and just the things that he clearly written into the stage directions to make you as an audience feel like you're the one on stage. Was fascinating. I think he's so good at that.
His observations on family life are pretty astute. And it's in the minutiae, the little things that happen that call back. I would love to know, as actors, how you get through this show 8 times a week when that struggle is so... Like, you guys look exhausted by the end of it. And I was exhausted watching and was frustrated. You know...
Do you mean how are we protecting our own mental health?
How do you... but also just as your craft. You have to keep yourself physically fit, mentally fit through this. I mean, because a lot of people don't know what we have to do in this industry to keep ourselves okay for 8 shows a week.
I love exercise. I love exercising. So I'll exercise at least 4 times a week, like go for a run or go to the gym. I also have a 5-year-old, so that just grounds me straight away. And I love these people that I'm working with, so I really enjoy that. I have therapy once a week, which is I've had for about a year, and it has like become a massive sort of tool in my life that I'm just really enjoying. So that's quite helpful. And I just really enjoy doing the play. I feel like I'm messed up or something. I really enjoy doing it. And also, like, I have a little sister, and watching the play and seeing Nicholas's behaviour has helped me understand her.
Yeah.
And has helped me to know what to do to help her, which is literally just be around her.
Yeah.
And don't push it. And she's just over the last couple of days started opening up and telling me stuff without me pushing it, because I've just been like, I'm here, I'm just going to be here, just going to be here, which the play's helped me learn how to do that.
And she came and saw the play as well.
Yeah,
she
absolutely loved it.
Do you get people talking to you much after the show? Do you get people coming up feeling compelled to ask you questions or to say something?
I think it was more apparent at the Kiln Theatre where we were on before, because it was such a small place that we'd all kind of walk through the bar where everyone was having a drink afterwards, and people would just really kind of be there with you. And sometimes that is quite a lot to deal with after a show, but also, like, there's loads of moments where people will say, oh, this play made me understand my sister or what she went through, or my godson went through a similar thing and now it's kind of answered some questions, and it didn't feel like a voyeuristic thing, but it felt quite cathartic that we were able to now talk about it. And lots of parents would come with their children and that kind of thing, and that's great to be in a production where people are actually being able to talk to each other after it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really cool thing.
Plays play differently in different spaces. Kiln, much smaller, obviously, much different setup. How was that a challenge for you guys coming into a different space, bringing this story to a much bigger back wall and everything else?
No, it wasn't that difficult. It's the set is actually narrower. The Kiln's got a wider stage, so actually we've lost a couple of panels either side of the stage.
Okay.
The main difference is it's higher, like the so there's 3 tiers that we now have to perform, but it doesn't. It's even though it's twice the size of an audience, maybe even a bit more. It's a lot. It's not, the intimacy isn't lost.
The audiences have been just as good. I mean, it got tremendous reviews.
Yeah.
At the Kiln. So is there, the follow on logical question? Is there a kind of I don't know? Do you feel a pressure to kind of, it comes into town?
Yeah.
Bigger house. Is there a pressure? Do you have a you know, responsibility to make sure that that same story is told here for a bigger audience or anything else.
Oh yeah, yeah, but also we sort of we don't get, this isn't for free. We didn't know quite what we had in terms of it when we were in Kilburn, at the Kiln, but the we found out quite soon afterwards that we were going to come here, and then we had a lot of time off, and actually when we came back to it, it was sort of, it sort of sunk into our bones a bit. So actually delivering and serving the play is, it's in us now.
Yeah.
As soon as the play starts, we're all together, we're all in a band, and we are all giving
it's
it
up. It's better now than it was in the Kiln.
Yeah.
But when we when I found out I was going into town, I shit myself. Because I was like, oh,
how are we going to do it again?
How are we going to do it again? How is it going to be as good, at least as good?
Yeah. And because it was so packed for that long, we did 7 weeks,
how are we
and
gonna
it was pretty
it,
it was pretty sold out every night. So it was like, all those patrons had come to see it. Will they come again? And that kind of thing. But the great thing about this one is that most nights there is a school group there of like
that's great.
15 upwards, and
those
are so the people I wanted to be coming to see this show, because we didn't really get that in Kilburn, because it did, as you say, do well in the reviews. It got pretty sold out pretty quickly, and there wasn't room for 50 kids to come every night, but it's really been happening, and that has been so cool. And you can hear them. I have like a bit of time before the show starts where I'm on stage just kind of doing a bit of pre-show
graffiti.
Bit of graffiti.
Let's talk,
you know,
what it, let's
youth,
call it what it is.
Lauren,
let's call it
But yeah, I can hear all the kids, and they're all up there, and they're all kind of like excited. And I remember what I was like when I was that age going to watch a show, and it was it was well cool.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have them here.
You guys need to go warm up. I would just like to ask what you'd like people to take away from the show. You know, I know it's that's a broad scoped question.
I think for me, trying to meet the people who are in your life where they are, as in trying not to drag them to where you want them to be or to where you expect them to be, but try and just see where they're at and respond to where they're at. I know that sounds really arty-farty, but like,
oh, that's great.
That's what I think.
It's not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, making making space to really listen to each other, I think, is an important thing, because there are times in this play where we don't do it and things go wrong and people get frustrated. But there would be times where if you just sat and really listened to someone, really talked to them and didn't give them a loaded question or a loaded answer and just sat and listened, I think things would be different.
Because if you're not a professional, you're an amateur. And the thing about these parents are they think they're doing what's best for their kids.
Yes.
But, you know, and it's only towards the end of the play. We always thought that was quite harsh language from the doctor, like, he's finally in good hands, or love isn't enough, love will not be enough. And, you know, this isn't a parent's thing, it's a psychiatrist. You know, it's things like that. So you, to listen, and also not to necessarily give something that you're not qualified to do. You may feel like you know the answer, and you may feel like you think you know what's best for someone who is going through these kind of things, but you just got to be there for them and take them on their terms. And that's what, you know, the mistakes that they make, they make them, the parents make them in this play, but they don't make them with bad intentions.
That's
or
absolutely correct.
They're just trying to be the best, and they're trying, and but also they're, they see what they see, and they see what they want to see.
Because of your own shit.
Because of your own shit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I saw it this week, this past week, and wow. Wow. It was really tough to watch.
Yes.
But I'm so glad I did it. And I wanted to shout at the stage, oh my lord. great script. I love Florian Zeller's writing. I've seen a couple of his things before. It's all the truth, it's all the father. How easy a yes was this? But knowing that the content was quite spectacularly, like, whew, brutal. When you read the script, how did it just
Of didn't read the script before I in my head I'd said yes, because I got sent it and I read the email from my agent, and he said, this is a play that's going to be being done at the Kiln, it's Florian Zeller, Mike Longhurst is directing, and John Light's in it. And I was like, I don't know if I have to read it, actually. Those four things alone were sort of, they drew me. And then I read it and was blown away by it. I think I read it in about 40 minutes, because I just, it's one of those I mean, he's an amazing writer, Fiorenzelli. Yeah. He's very good at writing very... he writes quite flowery. It's quite... Because it's translated, it feels... Sometimes it feels slightly left-field and a little bit surreal. But actually, it makes perfect sense. And he writes so well, beautifully for women as well, which is really nice. And so when I read it, and then I found out her character... my character, and then when I found out what happened at the end, it was sort of a no-brainer, because I wasn't expecting that ending. I thought, oh, when you know, when he comes back, he's like, oh, he's okay. It was just a blip. So that ending really for me was like, gosh, that's amazing.
You must hear it, and maybe you heard it more at the Kiln, just because the way that the theatre is set out, around me there were audible gasps.
Yeah, we get a lot of that.
How amazing that you've got to the end of your play and the people are leaning in, leaning forward and going...
Yes, it's amazing. And also, I've never heard a bad word about it. You know, sometimes you're in a play and people go, well, it wasn't really for me. But this, I've only ever had positive feedback from people that, you know, and people come out and say, I didn't enjoy it, but I did enjoy it. I feel really weird about saying I enjoyed it, but I did enjoy it, but not in the way that you're supposed to enjoy a theatre play. And I think it does, it's one of those plays that, it's a really hard one to categorise, I think, because there is some enjoyment in it, and it's not all doom and gloom, despite the content. And it is devastating, but there is something about it that makes you want to hug your loved ones tighter, and I think that's what he does beautifully.
Yeah.
I go home
I've
every
got
night.
You just give me chill
bumps. But it's one of those pieces where it's just, as I say, the content is devastating, but ultimately there is a feeling of looking out for those mistakes and making sure we're all okay, not only as a family but as a society. You know, I think it's important. This message is very, very important, particularly now with everything that's going on.
Yeah.
With the upheaval and the uncertainty and the viciousness coming out of America and here, and it's like, this is the sort of play that actually makes you go, we need to look closer to home and just start in our own back garden and cuddle each other more and love each other more.
Absolutely. But on... The other side of that was that the scene I was telling John and Laurie, that the scene where they fight, like, I was wanting John to shout at him, but then when John shouted at him, I went, don't do that.
Please don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah.
But I was so frustrated and wanted action, but I didn't know when I was begging him to go, just shake him by the collars.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. Don't.
No, don't, actually, don't do that. It's one of those... But that's the thing about this play, because, you know, people that come to see it, and I think this is true about it, is that you, at different points in the play, you like every character and you are so frustrated and angry with every character because, you know, everyone is in their own bubble and not listening to each other.
Mm.
And so you just want to shake them, go, look, this is what's happening and you shouldn't be doing this. And then you go, oh, but I feel really sorry for you, and that's why they're doing that. Yeah. And that's why it's one of those beautifully layered plays that makes you literally in a scene go, oh, you know.
How do you, we have a lot of actors listening to the podcast, you come on, it starts like that. Yeah. It starts with, he's not well. Yeah. And so how do you get to that point? Because, I mean, well... we all have different methods, but you know, you come in, there is no gentle, is like, our son is not well.
Yes, yeah.
It's straight away.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. I don't know, I mean, the thing is, I think with Mike Longhurst, our director, he set out very early on, he made us very clear that this is a piece of storytelling. So in the rehearsal room, we'd have music and we'd dance and we'd play games, which would counterbalance the visceral impact that you get in each scene, and so you kind of you manage it as an actor before you go it's storytelling, so you want to hit the ground running and you want to tell this story as accurately and as authentically as possible. So that's one of my favourite scenes, the opening one, because also you have no idea where it's going at that point. You think, what the hell is this, these two people standing opposite each other shouting at each other, getting really angry with each other, what is this? And that's when it starts to unravel. But it's a great opening.
It's great opening. You also titter. Like, we're laughing. There's giggles. Because we go,
absolutely,
oh, God, yeah, we've had that argument
and
before.
There's loads of laughs in the two hospital scenes. You know, it's like, which is
which is, and I think people just go, oh god, that's great, I can laugh. You know, there was a little.
I laughed when he said he's finally in a safe place.
Yeah.
I laughed. I let a little giggle.
A lot of
like,
people do that.
Oh, I don't know if that was because I looked around and went, oh god, I don't know.
Should
was
I?
That okay?
Oh god, yeah.
But I heard from the other fellas, your colleagues, how much of a, like you guys felt like a family. You were together, like the rehearsal process was great.
Early very
on,
early on, I think.
And sitting around a table for a couple of weeks to kind of, to go into that, diving in together, made it so.
Absolutely, and also we were very lucky because we had 5 weeks rehearsal.
That's
so
very
we
good
had
play.
The luxury of having a couple of weeks where we could just sort of get to know each other and be and trust each other and tell stories and talk about personal experiences. You know, to do with depression and suicide and things like that. So we were in a very safe place. And you know, you do have to be in a safe place with something like this. And by safe place, I mean that you have to trust your co-stars. And you have to like them. You really have to, we all have to like each other. And I think Mike was very instrumental in getting actors who aren't idiots or aren't assholes. You know what I mean? They are actually very decent people who do their job and know their craft.
God, I mean, I can't imagine having an asshole in this cast.
Absolutely.
Because it would kill it.
Yes, it would. There can't be any egos on stage.
Yeah.
And there is a you know, there could be quite easily, especially with the two main leads, Laurie's character and John's character. You know, they could be like these really arrogant people, and actually they're not. The two are the most generous actors I've ever worked with. And I think you need that in a piece like this. And so Mike was very careful about getting actors that leave their egos at the door.
Just a couple more questions. First was the transfer, because you found out early on that you were kind of coming in. It was such a success in the film. I mean, was there... The other guys didn't feel the pressure. I mean, I don't want to lead the witness, but they... You know, there is a... There's almost an expectation or a responsibility to kind of go, oh, it was a hit there. We've got to come in here and perform and do something. So... did you feel that at all? Because the house is different as well.
Slightly.
Is there an approach?
And also, it's a different audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different audience. So there is a different. We do have a different reaction. Both the Kiln audiences and the Duke of York audiences are incredible, and they're always along for the ride. But yes, I think there was a pressure not for it to become too West Endy, that we still wanted to keep the authenticity of the piece and the truthfulness of it. And I think we've managed to do that, mainly because we're in the Duke of York's and it's such an intimate space.
Mm.
I think anything larger, we would have lost a lot of the finite kind of, you know, layers of the piece. I was excited about bringing it in because I think I wanted more people to see it, because it's a story that I think needs to be seen by people.
Yes, a lot of kids need
to
see this.
Absolutely. And we do get a lot of students in to come and see it, and they're all very positive about it and really lovely, and it's a different audience, but it's an equally as lovely audience. I mean, as I say, I've never heard anything bad or anything, you know, sniffy about it.
Mm.
Whereas in some past productions, of course, you're gonna hear that. But this is completely, like, people are very encouraging about it. And I don't only think that's because of the subject matter. I think it's because of the writing and the directing and the care that's been taken in directing it.
I think, I mean, this is going to go out, and people have a couple of weeks to come see it, and they should. What would you like people to leave with when they leave the theatre? Because they will talk.
Yeah, they will. I mean, what I would love people to go away feeling is just the idea of checking in with people that you love and people that you care about, because sometimes we don't, because we all live in this crazy world, we're all really busy, and sometimes we neglect people that are close to us, or we just think they're doing fine. And I think what this play highlights is just being aware of the people around you, that maybe they might not be okay, so you just check in and ask questions and give hugs and make sure we are all okay, because I think we don't do that enough anymore. I think we are so caught up in what's going on that we don't check in with the people that we love most, and that's what I hope people will take away from this play.
Amaka Okafor, John Light, Laurie Kynaston, and Amanda Abington from the Company of the Sun, playing at the Duke of York's Theatre until the 4th of November. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping bits. If you're a theatre professional, you know what to do. Head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. You have to follow us on all the socials for all kinds of content. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Curtain Call. And you can follow me personally at John Schwab, J-O-H-N-S-C-H-W-A-B. Well, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast, get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at john@curtaincallonline.com. Now, just around the corner, if you're looking to attend the best networking opportunity you're going to get all year, you can rub shoulders with producers, general managers, stage managers, casting directors, directors, writers, anyone you need to know to put on a show, then you need to go to tppsuperconference.com and book your tickets today. It's over in New York, and there's never been a better time to travel. It's just before Thanksgiving. It's really cheap to get there. Promise you. Look it up. And don't forget to use the code CURTAIN19, all capital letters, to get your discount. CURTAIN19. Book it. Make sure you find us when you're there. Now, it just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Amaka Okafor, John Light, Lori Kynaston, Amanda Abingdon, and the entire company of The Sun at the Duke of York's Theater. And especially some shout-outs to company manager Heidi Leonard for orchestrating events, and to Kate Morley PR and Riona for assisting me in setting up the proceedings. The Sun will end its limited run on the 4th of November, so I urge you, if you haven't, go see it. It's a brilliantly written, acted, and directed show. And if you have teenage kids, maybe take them with you. It will start a discussion, and that is only a good thing. You will not be sorry. And there are still some incredible tickets to be had, so go. Thanks for listening to the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.